right. If you have the timeline, I don't think I have any left, so I apologize for that. I should have printed off more. But we are on the last page. We have been talking about studying the Bible in a chronological way.
It should work.
We've been studying trying to study the Bible in a chronological way, trying to understand where all these things fit in time. And they can be rather confusing sometimes. And one of the things that I wanted to point out is last week we went over quite a few things that didn't seem to sync up. Things that someone who is a skeptic would come out and say, well, that's a contradiction. And one of the points for my bringing them up and talking about them, and I want to be clear on this, is, of course, I don't want to overthrow anyone's faith. I don't want anyone to look at that and say, oh, that is a contradiction. What I want you to do is look at these things critically, look at these things in a way that that we can try to reconcile these things. If you read the passages that are presented here in the timeline in the order that they are presented, then you will notice that some of the numbers don't match up, some of the names don't match up, some different things just don't seem to match up. But, again, these are only alleged contradictions. There are ways to explain some of these things. And that's why I bring them up. Because anyone who is a skeptic will bring them up. And I want you, if you are going to look at these things, to look at them in such a way that we can reconcile them. So hopefully that's clear. I don't think there are any more that I have in store for today, but I did want to be clear on that matter since we talked about that quite a bit last week. So we have talked about the famine, rather the census, that David took. And it's recorded in 2 Samuel 24 and 1 Chronicles 21. And we saw that he conducted this census. Joab went out and counted the people, or had the people counted, but his heart wasn't in it. Joab himself knew that such a thing was not what God wanted. Now I have a question. Why wasn't it what God wanted? Oh, I mean, we have in plenty of places where a census was taken. The Book of Numbers is called the Book of Numbers because they took a census. Two censuses, in fact. One as they were leaving Sinai, and one as, or perhaps before Sinai, before they left Sinai, or and one as they were about to enter into the Promised Land. So why is taking a census at this time the wrong thing to do? All right.
Not ordered by God.
Not ordered by God. Yeah, the ones in Numbers were likely ordered by God. I'm reading ahead, looking at some of the things in the Divided Kingdom, and they have some. There are a couple times when a census is made. Let's take a look at one of those passages. I believe 1 Chronicles 21. 1 Chronicles 21.
Apparently Joab knew who was telling David to check number the...
Yeah, Joab's pretty familiar with him himself, with all the bad things he's done. The reason that we can see is that God promised that the Israelites would be very numerous. And trying to confirm that is what David seemed to be doing. So in other words, he was testing God. Now, is testing God something we ought to be doing?
No.
No, no. In fact, Satan tried to get Jesus to test God in the temptations, right? Now, this time, we've just read 2 Samuel 22, where it talks about in the very first verse there that all of David's enemies have been defeated. This isn't a matter of warfare or trusting in your men and trusting in your military might. This is a matter of trusting in God. And this is essentially a time of peace that we're talking about from here on page 4, or the last page of this timeline, is essentially a time of peace. And so he's trying to test God here. And that is not something that they are to do. We see that God gives an ultimatum. He says, okay, these three things are going to happen. These three things are going to happen. You choose which one. Which one does David choose? First off, there's you'll be chased by your enemies for a few months. I don't remember the other option. You'll have a plague, of course, that will run through the area. And let's see, there was a third one. Some of your enemies will come up and strike you, I believe. So, which one does he choose? He chooses the plague. That's right. Well, that's, if you can read the board from where you're sitting at, then it should be obvious. Yes, he chose the plague. And the plague, yes.
I'm just guessing.
Well, and you would be right. So he chose the plague because he thought, okay, God will sort out through this plague who is righteous and who isn't.
It's also much, much shorter, 3 days versus 3 years.
Yes, it is shorter. That's also true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Though a lot more people are going to likely be killed through this plague. And in fact, it does say quite a few people are killed. But again, God is sorting through the righteous and the unrighteous. And that's what's going on at this time. Let's turn over, yes.
You can also say that the weak and the most vulnerable would die too.
Possibly, but God, David, the reason why David chose the plague was so that God could sort out the righteous and the unrighteous. And so that, and then eventually he says, please stop this plague. These people, you know, haven't done the wrong thing. I did the wrong thing. Punish me. And he does say that eventually. So he uses this opportunity to show God's righteousness. All right. Let's turn to Psalm 39 real quick. Hold your place here. Psalm 39. This particular psalm does not have a description, does not have an inscription that indicates anything about its time period, about when it was written. But it does say it was a psalm of David. Now, if you've got one of the older timelines, especially for Saul's reign, when I was looking at different possibilities for when these things were written, they said, okay, this is early on in David's life when Saul was reigning, this particular psalm. But then I actually read the psalm a little closer and found out that it makes more sense to go at this point. And here's why. First, the reason why I thought it might have gone with the earlier one is Psalm 39. Oh, I'm in 37. Psalm 39, verses 5 and 6. Somebody read that, please.
Indeed, you have made my days as handbreadths, and my age is as nothing before you. Certainly every man at his best state is but vapor. Surely every man walks about like a shadow. Surely they busy themselves in vain, and he heaps up riches, and does not know who will gather them.
Well, that sounds a little bit like James 4, doesn't it? If you're familiar with that, about life being a vapor, is here one moment, gone the next. Sounds a little bit like that. Well, when you're looking at this particular passage and you see something about, he's talking about age, there are two possibilities in my mind. Either A, he is very young and is talking about, you know, just looking forward into the future and realizing, boy, he doesn't have long to live, relatively speaking. Or he's very old and realizes, I really don't have very long to live. And he says, you have made my days as handbreadths. Handbreadths are about this long, about 3 inches. And so when he says, my days are like handbreadths, they're very short. So I figured this could have gone with something very, when he was very young or very old. Well, what convinced me that it's talking about a time when he is older comes in verse 10. Remove your plague from me. I am consumed by the blow of your hand. This didn't happen early on in David's reign. This happened later on when he's talking about the plague, this blow that he's facing right now. And so this is why I place Psalm 39 here. Normally, I don't go over psalms that don't have an inscription about a time, but I figured this was a good thing right at the moment to look at, this particular psalm. All right, there is a typo in your... Oh, no, a typo... in your outlines. In the second entry, there on the last page, I have sacrifice at Oronna's or Orna's threshing floor. Now, there are two names given for this person. There's the name given in 2 Samuel, and then there is a name given in 1 Chronicles, and they are different names, but they are similar enough. One can easily see how over time, well, 1 Chronicles was written much later. Over time, the name, they were just hearing the name and wrote it down in a certain way so that it's here. The typo is, it's not Orna's, it's Ornan's. So I just thought I'd make that clear so there's no confusion. There is a sacrifice at Orna. I'm going to use Ornan because that's a little easier for us to say, or at least for me to say. There is a sacrifice at Orna's threshing floor. So here's an interesting event that occurs. The angel of the Lord comes down with a sword. And he's at Orna's threshing floor. And David comes up and is told by a prophet, hey, make an altar in this location and sacrifice to God here. Well, later we find out something very interesting about this location. This is eventually what ends the plague. He makes a sacrifice here at this altar that he builds, or he has built, and the plague is ended. First, he has to purchase the threshing floor area from Ornan, which is why his name features quite a bit. But there's something very interesting. Let's turn to 2 Chronicles chapter 3. And somebody read verse 1, please.
Now Solomon began to build the house of the Lord at Jerusalem on Mount Moriah, where the Lord had prepared to his father David at the place that David had prepared on the threshing floor at Ornan, the Jebusite.
All right, so this is the location of where the temple was supposed to be. I find that interesting. I didn't, before doing this, that I hadn't made that connection before. And it's one of those things that I thought I'd bring out because you don't notice that. That's not mentioned in 2 Samuel. It's not mentioned in 1 Kings. It's not mentioned in 1 Chronicles. But it's mentioned here in this passage, this place that he offers this sacrifice, this event where the angel of the Lord comes down and David is so frightened by this. It must have been a magnificent sight. This was the location that they chose to build the temple. has a lot of significance, a little bit more significance perhaps than you knew before, if you didn't, if you weren't aware of that fact. All right. Any comments or questions before we go on? All right. So we have come pretty much to the end of 2 Samuel. We're going to go back to 2 Samuel in a little bit if we've got time this morning. But what we see here in this passage now, earlier, if you remember, we had a break in 1 Chronicles in chapter 20 where a lot of stuff happens in 2 Samuel. And we come back to 1 Chronicles, and now we're at a point where a lot of stuff happens in 1 Chronicles, and we leave behind 2 Samuel for a little bit, and 1 Kings, because they kind of go together. So, one of those things is David preparing to build the temple. We see this in 1 Chronicles chapter 22. He starts preparing to build the temple. And I want to mention that because can he build the temple? Will the Lord permit him to build this temple?
No.
And he can't actually build it, but what can he do?
Site preparation.
Prepare for it. Make sure that everything is where it needs to be. And in fact, in 20... it's mentioned twice, and I know where the second one is. I wanted to show the first one. But the second one is in 1 Chronicles 29, in the last chapter. He gives the reason why he is preparing this at this time. He says that his son is inexperienced. Chapter 29, verse 1. Furthermore, King David said to all the assembly, "My son Solomon, whom alone God has chosen, is young and inexperienced, and the work is great, because the temple is not for man, but for God." So the idea is he's preparing this because he is an old man by this point. In chapter 26, verse 31, we see what year of his reign that all this occurs. And it says in the latter half of that verse, in the 40th year of the reign of David, they were sought, and there were found among them capable men at Jazer of Gilead. So this is in the 40th year. How many years did David reign?
40
years. This is in his last year. These last few chapters take place in the last year of David's reign, except for 27, because that spans all of David's reign. But we see that this is all in the 40th year. This is the last year. He's an old man. Perhaps he knows he is on his way out. Perhaps he knows he is about to die, and he wants to prepare everything he can for his son Solomon. Because why? He is inexperienced. I have guessed that he's about 20 when he takes the throne. And do you remember what you were like at 20? For those of you who are not...
Smart!
Yeah. We always think that we are.
I would say gifted.
Yeah. Whatever the case, I did some pretty moronic things when I was 20. I don't know about you. And so we realize just how much that Solomon was thinking at that time. Of course, back then, they tended to grow up a little bit faster than we do. And hopefully, anyway, in some cases. So perhaps he was a little bit more mature than we might have been. But even so. He was young and inexperienced, and David wanted to make sure. It's no different than you preparing for your end. I mean, everybody should be doing that, preparing a will and doing things to help take care of their family should the worst happen. And that's what David is doing at this point. He names his son Solomon as a successor. We can see that in chapter 23, verse 1. So when David was old and full of days, he made his son Solomon king over Israel. Now, I don't have him as being the king at this point. I have him as promised to be the king because of what happens later in 1 Kings. And we have all these things that show all the preparations that he made. And in chapter 26, we see maybe a familiar name here, verse 1, concerning the divisions of the gatekeepers of the of the Korahites, Meshelemiah, the son of Korah, and of the sons of Asaph. I don't mean all those names, but the Korahites. Now, do you remember the sons of Korah? They were among the authors of the Psalms. And so what I have here, since we know precious little about any of these people, about any of the Korahites, about any of the sons of Korah, I've placed all of the Psalms that were written by the sons of Korah in that spot, talking that after it mentions them here in 1 Chronicles 26. These are the sons of Korah. These become the gatekeepers. Many of them do. And so we see in Psalm 84, it is better to be, verse 10, it is better to be a doorkeeper in the house of the Lord than to dwell in the tents of wickedness. So they even talk about being a doorkeeper, being a gatekeeper. And so that's one of the things that we see in this. That's why I have them here. Next, I have on here David's Songs of Ascents. Now, the Songs of Ascents are a section in the book of Psalms. They start in Psalm 120 and end in Psalm 134. So let's look at those real quick. Psalm 120 through 134. These are 15 psalms, and they have been compiled in this particular arrangement, put in this particular location here in the book of the Psalms. Now, there are a couple different theories about why, you know, what these Songs of Ascents are. I've placed them here because they seem to be songs as they are about to enter into worship, as they are ascending to the temple, hence the Song of Ascents, ascending to the temple about to worship. Now, the temple hasn't been built yet, but David writes these, so this is in preparation for the building of the temple. And so he writes these particular songs, psalms. There are four of them that David wrote. One of them is, in fact, written by Solomon, Psalm 127. So, and many of them are not attributed. So I've got these four written by David because, of course, he has to write them before he dies. And so they are written in preparation for temple worship. They are rather short psalms for the most part. Some of them are only like three verses. So they are, again, these songs to prepare their minds for worship. All right. Next, any questions, comments? Yes.
When you said 40 years, that reminded me of Moses. I believe when he came down from the mountain and he got mad at the people and he said, y'all didn't deserve this, and they had to walk through the desert for 40 years.
Right. Well, the number 40 certainly does appear a lot in scriptures, a lot to the extent that a lot of people believe that they're symbolic numbers, but we, and for the purpose of this class, we're assuming that they're not. And I think if we were to understand the Bible as best we can, we take them as actual years, 40 years. So yeah, the number 40 does occur quite a lot in scriptures. 40 days and 40 nights that the rain occurred for Noah's flood. 40 days that Jesus is fasting. 40 days that Moses fasts up on the mountain, getting the law twice. 40 years occurs several times in the book of the Judges, where they have a period of rest. So, yeah, 40 years for the reign of Saul, 40 for David, 40 for Solomon. So, yes, 40 does occur quite a lot in the scriptures. So it would not be surprising if you were to think about one of those things. Thank you, Art. All right. So, for the next section, 1 Kings chapter 1. All I have on the board, if you can't read that, says palace intrigue. There's a lot of stuff going on in this chapter. I have written down on the sheet here, if you've got a timeline, it starts off with David being very old. And we know that in 1 Chronicles, if he's in his 40th year, 1 Chronicles 26, oh, sorry, there's one more thing I wanted to mention. So let me get back just a little bit. 1 Chronicles 26, that reminded me. So I apologize for that. There's one more thing in 1 Chronicles 26. I wasn't quite sure where to place this in terms of a chronology, so I'm just going to leave it here. Verse 25 and following. And his brethren by Eleazar were Rehabiah his son, Jeshiah his son, Joram his son, Zichri his son, and Shelomith his son. This Shelomith and his brethren were over all the treasuries of the dedicated things which King David and the heads of fathers' houses, the captains over thousands and hundreds, and the captains of the army had dedicated. Some of the spoils won in battle they dedicated to maintain the house of the Lord. And all that Samuel the seer, all the way back to Samuel, Saul the son of Kish, Abner the son of Ner, and Joab the son of Zeruiah had dedicated. Every dedicated thing was under the hand of Shelomith and his brethren. So I mention that here because what was one of those things that David found in the tabernacle that he used to protect himself when he was on the run from Saul? Goliath's sword. That's right. That was a spoil that had been gathered in battle and so placed in the tabernacle area, and it was under the guard, under the keeping of Shelomith and his family. So that's why I mention that here. Again, not sure where to place that since it goes all the way back to Samuel and goes through to this point, to Joab. All right, back to the palace intrigue. First Kings chapter 1. This is a lot of things, again, happen. It mentions that David is old. He's so old that he can't warm himself. He's just freezing all the time. So a young woman named Abishag comes to warm him, comes to help him maintain his body temperature. It says specifically that there is nothing going on there in a sexual way. And that's important because later on we'll see how she features. We also see that Adonijah. Now, who is Adonijah? He's on the list of the people that we have ages for. Who's Adonijah? He's one of David's sons, his fourth son born to him while he was reigning in Hebron. All right, remember it was Amnon who was killed long before, Kileab, Absalom who was killed a little bit later, and now Adonijah. Kileab, also called Daniel in 1 Chronicles, there's not a lot said about him. In fact, I think that's the only time he's mentioned. But Adonijah being that fourth son born to David. And so he believes he has the right to the throne. Amnon dead, Absalom dead. Amnon is the oldest, so he has the right to claim the throne. Of course, I don't know about Kileab. Maybe he just wasn't suitable for kingship. I don't know. But we see that Adonijah believes this. And in fact, several other people agree with him, including Joab. Now, we already saw that David had named Solomon his successor there in 1 Chronicles 23. And it says later on, hey, didn't you say Solomon was going to be the successor, was going to come after you? Well, this is what Adonijah is doing, because, of course, David is old and he's in his bed and he's not aware of all the goings on. So we have a couple people that follow after Adonijah. That's Joab and Abiathar. Abiathar is one of the priests, and in fact, he is the high priest at this time. And Zadok, who is of the other line, so Abiathar is a son of Ithamar, who is one of Aaron's sons, and Zadok is a son of Eleazar, again, one of David's or Aaron's sons. So, so the line of, sometimes they're mentioned together, and the line of Ithamar is Abiathar, and the line of Eleazar is Zadok. And we'll see what happens to them in a little bit. But a few people, of course, stay on David's side. We see, again, Zadok does, and several Nathan the prophet, and several of the mighty men, and a few people we've not seen before, as mentioned here in verse 8, Shimei and Rei. Shimei, we've talked about a Shimei before, but chances are this is not the same Shimei. Because he's mentioned a little bit later on, the one who cursed David on the road. All right. So they talk, they try to sort things out with Nathan and David. And one of the things I'll point out is in somebody read verses 38 and 39 of chapter 1 of 1 Kings. 1 Kings 1, 38 and 39.
So Zadok the priest, Nathan the prophet, Benaniah the son of Jehoiada, the Cherethites and the Pelethites went down and had Solomon ride on King David's mule and took him to Gion. Then Zadok the priest took a horn of oil from the tabernacle and anointed Solomon. And they blew the horn and all the people said, "Long live King Solomon."
All right. So, in order to remedy this, they are making a public display that Solomon is the successor. It's not Adonijah. He's being a usurper at this point. This is going to be Solomon. This is when he is anointed. Turn over to 1 Chronicles, and I find this fascinating. 1 Chronicles chapter 29. And read verses 21 through 24.
And they sacrificed sacrifices unto the Lord, and offered burnt offerings unto the Lord on the morrow after the day, even 1,000 bullocks, 1,000 rams, and 1,000 lambs with their drink offerings, and sacrifices in abundance for all Israel. And then they eat and drink before the Lord on that day with great gladness, and they made Solomon the son of David king the second time, and anointed him unto the Lord to be the chief governor, and Zadok to be priest. Then Solomon sat on the throne of the Lord as king instead of David his father, and prospered, and all Israel obeyed him, and all the princes and the mighty men, and all the sons likewise of King David submitted themselves unto Solomon the king.
All right, thank you very much. So we see in verse 22 that he was anointed a second time. We're not shown in 1 Chronicles a first time that he was anointed, unless you count 1 Chronicles 23:1, which is possible. But it doesn't specifically say that he is anointed the first time in 1 Chronicles. So we see the first time he's anointed here in 1 Kings chapter 1, verse 39. And I find that fascinating. Maybe other people don't. I don't know. but another thing that I also found fascinating is in verse 24, it says that all the sons of King David submitted themselves to Solomon. Well, we know that this has to take place after Adonijah's rebellion, right? Because then Adonijah wouldn't have submitted to the rebellion, or wouldn't have submitted to Solomon, wouldn't have had the rebellion. So we see that all these things occurring here in 1 Kings. At the end of 1 Kings, we see that that Solomon is anointed king, and that, I believe, Abiathar is demoted as the high priest. I think that's here at 1 Kings 1. So we see that the line goes back to Eleazar, that the high priest then now is Zadok. And this is because Abiathar betrayed Solomon, betrayed David, in going with Adonijah. Now, one of the things I want to point out with that is Abiathar was one of the priests that stayed with David quite a lot. When David was on the run from Saul, Abiathar was with him. His father was killed. Abiathar was with David. He should have been loyal to David. But in fact, he was not. Toward the end, he betrayed him. So he is no longer allowed to be, at least his line is no longer allowed to be the high priest. That now goes to Zadok. All right, I see the kids waiting for us. So this is the end of 1 Kings chapter 1. We will go on with 1 Chronicles 28 next week. All right, thank you.